Chapter 9 The Great Discovery. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet. Revelation of John. February 1866. The door had scarcely closed on the Quimby years when a new door opened in Mary's experience, one that was never to be shut. She had been as influenced by animal magnetism as Eve had been by the same serpent in the Garden of Eden, but her experience in February of 1866 marked the beginning of her awakening. It would be 9 more years before she was fully awake, but the incident that occurred on Thursday evening, February 1st, precipitated the falling away of mesmerism and the revelation of her great discovery. Daniel was again away on one of his jaunts, and his wife was on her way with friends to a meeting of the Good Templars, when she fell on the ice and was severely injured. She was carried in an insensible condition into a nearby residence. A doctor was called, and friends stayed with her through the night. When she regained consciousness the next morning, she insisted against the doctor's advice on being taken to her home in Swampscott. The physician made several visits and said on Saturday that there was nothing more that he could do for her, and her friends notified their minister. In an interview in later years, Mrs. Eddy said, "The dear ones around me said, 'If you can't live, tell us something. Do tell us something, as you always do, of your views.' I said to them, 'Why, I can't conceive in this vestibule that there is death. It does not seem death to me. Life seems continuous, and my father's face dearer than ever before.' The clergyman entered and said, 'You seem near heaven. Do you realize that you cannot recover?' I said, 'They tell me so, but I cannot realize it.' And he said to me, 'I must see you again. I am engaged now, but I will call in a little time. I want to see you again living if I can.' He stepped out. I requested the others to leave the room, and they did. Then I rose from my bed, perfectly sound. Never knew health before. Always an invalid. I went downstairs. The clergyman returned. He was so startled, he did not know whether to conclude it was me in the body or out. He said, 'What does this mean?' I said, 'I do not know.' The doctor was sent for. He said, 'How was this done?' I said, 'I cannot tell you in any wise whatever, except it seemed to me all a thing or state of my mental consciousness. It didn't seem to belong to the body or material condition. When I awakened to this sense of change, I was there. That is all I know.' He said, 'This is impossible.' And immediately I felt I was back again, and I staggered. He caught me and set me in a chair, and he said, 'There, I will go out. If you have done that much, you can again.' When I found myself back again, I felt more discouraged than ever. As I sat there, it all seemed to come to me again with such a light and such a presence, and I felt it is all the mind. These are spiritual stages of consciousness, and rose right up again. And then I felt I never could be conquered again. Long after her discovery, when Mrs. Eddy was teaching the divinity course to a few of her students, she told them, "When I first came to Christian Science, I was lifted right out of the belief of sickness into the belief of perfect health. Since then, I am working out of that belief in health into the science of health. And it would have been easier if I had never been in that belief, just as it is with one who sings by ear, which is not the science of music. It would have been easier to have commenced right in the first place than to have to unlearn and learn over again." She had much to unlearn from the Quimby years. Jesus had said of John, "Behold, I send my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare the way before thee. Notwithstanding, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he." Jesus knew that John's work was entirely from a wrong basis. But Mrs. Patterson did not yet know this about Quimby's work. Mary had suddenly found herself on the mountaintop. She did not know how she had gotten there, and she did not know how to stay there. Her contact with others tended to pull her down, so she wrote to Mr. Julius Dresser, one of Quimby's more intellectual patients, asking him to help her, and enclosing a eulogy she had written after Quimby's death. Lynn, February 14, 1866. Mr. Dresser, "Sir, I enclose some lines of mine in memory of our much-loved friend, which perhaps you will not think overwrought in meaning. Others must, of course. I am constantly wishing that you would step forward into the place he has vacated. I believe you would do a vast amount of good and are more capable of occupying his place than any other I know of. 2 weeks ago, I fell on the sidewalk and struck my back on the ice and was taken up for dead. Came to consciousness amid a storm of vapors from cologne, chloroform, ether, camphor, etc. But to find myself the helpless cripple I was before I saw Dr. Quimby. The physician attending said I had taken the last step I ever should. But in 2 days I got out of my bed alone, and will walk. But yet I confess, I am frightened. And out of that nervous heat, my friends are forming, spite of me, the terrible spinal affection from which I have suffered so long and hopelessly. Now, can't you help me? I believe you can. I write this with this feeling. I think that I could help another in my condition if they had not placed their intelligence in matter. This I have not done, and yet I am slowly failing. Won't you write me if you will undertake for me if I can get to you? Respectfully, Mary M. Patterson." Mr. Dresser responded in the negative. though his letter was kindly, he said in part, "As to turning doctor myself and undertaking to fill Dr. Quimby's place and carry on his work, it is not to be thought of for a minute. Can an infant do a strong man's work? Nor would I, if I could." Dr. Quimby gave himself away to his patients. Julius Dresser was the only Quimby patient, aside from Mrs. Patterson, who seemed to have any comprehension of the doctor's method. The Ware sisters, who were perhaps Quimby's most devoted followers, had no success in healing. Emma Ware wrote in 1882, "I devoted myself exclusively to his instruction as long as he lived, but I never learned the art of healing." Once again in her experience, Mary had no place to turn but to God. Spirit had lifted her to the mountaintop, and Spirit would be her only instructor henceforth. Her instantaneous healing from the injury that neither surgery nor medicine could reach was the falling apple that led to her discovery. But her great discovery that all causation is mind and every effect a mental phenomenon was not instantaneous. She had been seeking scientific healing for 20 years, and there were many more months of searching and pondering before she understood her own healing. It was the latter part of 1866 before she arrived at the scientific certainty of how to be well herself and how to heal others. Even then, she had not discarded Quimby's influence, so for many years thereafter, she tended to date her discovery from her work in Warren, for it was there that she first had the peculiar feeling that she ought to be perfect after the command of science. Seldom is a momentous occasion recognized at the time, but the distance of years gives a proper perspective until it is seen in all its import. So was it with Mrs. Patterson's healing in February of 1866. As the years increased, it stood out more and more as the great turning point in her experience, from which point she was directed by God and instructed by experience. In 1881, she wrote a 2.5-page account of her healing in the third edition of Science and Health, in which she said, "There were results connected with our recovery at the time we have named that rendered it still more remarkable, which we have not given to the public." One of those results she revealed years later in a letter to a student, Caroline W. Frame. "The first experience of mine in entering upon the discovery of Christian Science was the entire stoppage of the periods that are believed to be concurrent with the moon. Hence, that saying of the revelator of the spiritual idea, the moon was under her feet. Often it seems to be discouraging to hear my female students talk of this period as if it was part of their life, normal and scientific." Whether Caroline Frame was able to profit from this letter is not known, but it is known that other students have. When husbands and wives together have understood, embraced, and followed Mrs. Eddy's teaching on sex and marriage, the subliminary monthly period has immediately ceased. Some further notes from the Divinity Course are as follows. In a booklet entitled Fragment of a Lost Gospel, published by the Oxford University Press, giving account of sayings of Jesus that are regarded as authentic by scholars, we find the following. When Salome asked when those things about which she questioned should be made known, the Lord said, "When ye trample upon the garment of shame, when the two become one, and the male with the female, neither male nor female." The meaning being that Christ's kingdom on earth would not be manifested until man had returned to the state of innocence in which sexual ideas and relations had no place. When Salome asked how long death would prevail, the Lord said, "So long as ye women bear children, for I have come to destroy the works of the female." Logia of Jesus, Christian Science Journal, Volume 25. Jesus was asked, "When shall the dominion of death cease?" Jesus saith, "As long as material birth continues, for I came to destroy the works of birth." See Matthew 5:17 and Science and Health, page 69. This teaching on sex and marriage is basic to the scientific method of warfare as presented in the 12th chapter of Revelation. It is a new song that mortals cannot learn without giving up their belief in mortality for an immortal basis, and the 144,000 who learn it are not only the redeemed of earth, but the redeemers of the earth. These are they who are not defiled with sex, and who with mental anatomy, analyzing every thought, devote themselves constantly to self-purification until they be found with no guile and without fault before the throne of God.